Hello, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to this episode of Fake TV Critic, a podcast where I discuss the week's biggest TV news headlines, recap and analyze some of my favorite shows, and let you know what you should be watching. As expected, my episode last week was dated as soon as it was released. There has been an agreement reached between the AMPTP and the WGA, so the writer's strike is officially over. The SAG strike, the actor strike, is still ongoing, but again, I'm recording this on Sunday, and tomorrow or Monday, the day you may be listening to this, the day this episode comes out, the guild is meeting and negotiating with studio heads. So there may also be a resolution to the Screen Actors Guild strike very soon as well. So keep your fingers crossed for that. It's been a week now that the writers have been back to work. As of tonight, Monday, October 2nd, most of the late night shows are returning. Colbert, Kimmel, and Fallon, I think, are all back tonight. John Oliver, I think, came back last night, tonight, Sunday. I think he's already back. And a lot of scripted shows have reassembled writers' rooms and are getting ready to get back into production. Shows, the one that I remember reading about was 911 was the first show to get back to work, which is unsurprising to me. So we will have some type of quote-unquote broadcast season. And in spring of 2024, there will hopefully be some new scripted content for our consumption. And let me tell you, the well is a little dry at the moment, so dry that I, this week, decided to watch a show that I have no interest in, that I do not care about, that I did not watch season one of. This is season two. That does not look good. That does not appeal to me in any way. Nothing about it is meant for me personally, and yet I watched the first episode and may continue to watch it out of boredom, out of morbid curiosity. Take your pick. And that show is Special Forces, World's Toughest Test, which airs Mondays on Fox. And this is, I'm going to say something that I probably don't actually mean, but in the moment I do. At this particular moment, I mean this. It is the dumbest show I have ever seen. And yes, I do watch The Masked Singer. I watched all the original seasons of Jersey Shore. I watch Catfish. I watch so many terrible TV shows. And yet, I think World's Toughest Test might be the dumbest, like the one that lacks the even like a modicum of intelligence or logic or suspense or through line. This is truly a nonsensical TV series. Now it's a setup and that's it. There's no premise, there's no story, there's no competition. It is a show where a bunch of special forces people, I don't think any of whom are American. Also, what is special forces? Honestly, like, I'm not even sure what that is. It's an adaptation of a British show, which, there we go. And it follows celebrities, semi-celebrities, perhaps, former celebrities even, and they're like dropped into a remote location and they go through military-ish training and that's it. Like, where they do these weird goofy ass things that the people running the show, like the trainers, are taking super seriously as if they are training actual, like, special force operatives. I don't know what the fuck special forces is. Is it Interpol? Is it the FBI? Is it the American military? Is it international military? No fucking clue. But it's basically an excuse for a bunch of like hyper masculine dudes to demean people and feel like they're doing it for good reason. I don't know. It's weird as hell. And basically the reason I'm watching it this season is I want to see Tom Sandoval of Vanderpump Rules fame get his ass kicked. And I was promised in a preview for the season that at some point someone beats the shit out of him. And I'm sure it's in like some training thing where they're like, one of your tests of your endurance is to stand there and take a bunch of punches because this is some toxic masculine bullshit on this show. But I do want to see Tom Sandoval get hit in the face. And there are other people on the show that I wouldn't mind seeing get hit in the face. People like Black China. And not that I have anything against him, but I do think it would be fun to like see someone beat up Jack Osborne. Like, for no reason. There's nothing wrong with him. I don't dislike him. I just think that would be entertaining to me. You know what I mean? And also on this season is Tara Reid from the American Pie movies and the Sharknado movies and Josie and the Pussycats and, you know, a whole bunch of other shit. And this woman is a mess. We all know this. She has been tabloid fodder for many years because she was so young when she became famous in 99 with American Pie. I think she said on the episode she was 19. And she was beautiful and I don't know if I want to say talented because I don't know if I'd go that far. Like there was nothing wrong with her. She wasn't bad by any means. But also, you know, for sure, her looks didn't hurt, is what I'm trying to say. And since then, that American Pie, that was 99. It is now 2023. So that was 20, almost 5 years ago. She's not 19 anymore. And, you know, I am not here to judge. I don't know what she has done or had done. But she does not look the way she looked when she was 19. And she directly addresses this and says that the reason she's doing this show, where she's being demeaned and beaten down and has to build herself back up, is that she wants to be a stronger person because she feels like she's been beaten down so much and she has nothing left and she's weak and she's a punching bag and she wants to learn how to deal with those feelings of inferiority that she has felt her entire life because of the tabloids and the media and people on social media and that kind of shit. And she directly addresses, you know, like, people expect me to look a certain way, but I'm not 19 anymore. And like, that is true. Obviously she has aged, but also like there's something else there. And I am not a doctor. I am just an observer. And it looks like perhaps some maybe plastic surgery. Also potentially maybe some substance use. You know, I don't know. Allegedly, I'm not accusing her of anything. But, you know, there is one point in the episode where she gets chastised because she sneaks in 3 packs of cigarettes and tries to sneak off to try to smoke one, like, an hour after arriving. And, you know, smoking does age people, and the length to which she is addicted to her cigarettes makes me think that maybe she may have an addictive personality. That's all I'm saying. But she's on the show. She's a train wreck. She can't do anything. It's almost sad to watch. She's very bad at this. And it's stuff like the first challenge, quote-unquote challenge competition. I don't fucking know what this is. Training course, whatever. This show is so goddamn stupid. Is that they, like, strap them to harnesses, and they have to walk a balance beam hanging over a gorge while one of the trainers calls them pathetic and whatever. And what's his name? I don't remember his name. Billy, maybe? Bobby? Billy? Bobby. Bobby, baby. Bobby, honey. Something like that. Anyway, he's a douchebag, and he's maybe, I don't know, like British, or they're in New Zealand, so maybe he's from down under. I don't fucking know. But he's a twat, and he just yells at them and calls them pathetic and ugly and stupid and all this other stuff. And, like, I don't know, he, like, tries to intimidate them. And at one point, he goes up to Brian Austin Green from Beverly Hills 90210. Again, we're talking celebrities, but we're quote-unquote celebrities, right? And he, like, asks him a question or something, and he's like, no more acting! I'm sorry if I just blow your eardrums. to Brian Austin Green, and I bursted out laughing because here is a man who is pretending to be a military sergeant on a show with a bunch of D-list celebrities and social media personalities. And he's like, no more acting, as he is acting himself the whole show, pretending to be training people, pretending that his job matters, pretending to be serious. You know what I mean? Like, this is not a serious show. It is the most unserious show. And the fact that half the cast is taking it seriously and the other half is like, dude, what are we even doing here? Is wild to me personally. Like, they each get a number and that's what they refer to them as and not their names. And it's like, like in the military, this is all meant to demean you, to break you down, to make you a soldier, a cog in the machine. But in this, like, it just is so funny and silly and stupid. And like, they're all out in the cold in New Zealand in the winter. And I don't know, like, they're all, I don't know if they're all actually on edge or if they're pretending to be on edge, but they're like, they make them carry a big rock at one point and hold it over their heads. And somebody, I think maybe Jack Osborne, vomits. And it's supposed to be, I don't understand what the point of the show is, because no one wins. Like, there's no eliminations. There's no prize. It's just like, you keep going until you either quit, get medically evacuated, or finish the whole show. Like, I don't understand the point of this. What are we doing here? And then they kidnap people. Like, they kidnap JoJo Siwa at one point and throw a bag over her head and then, quote unquote, interrogate her. And basically, it's just like, why are you laughing so much? And like, first of all, she's laughing because she's pretending to be a soldier and she's 20 years old. That's why she's laughing. Also, the toxic behavior on the show is beyond. The fact that they say something like, you can't, that smile is only going to get you so far. Like, as if to be successful at being in the military or being strong, which is what they keep saying they're trying to do, is like make them stronger. And the people are here because they want to be stronger. Tara wants to be stronger. JoJo Siwa wants to be more independent. That like, you have to be miserable in order to be strong or independent. That's fucking insane. Like, why can't they do some of these challenges and smile? Like, why can't JoJo laugh while she's walking across a balance beam flying high above a gorge? Like, someone's yelling at her and like, it's not serious. There's no actual danger there. She's gonna fall and she's gonna hang there in the air while someone's like, you're pathetic. Like, okay, bitch, you're pretending to be Arlie Ermey from Full Metal Jacket on a reality TV show. At least people know my name. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's wild. But also, why can't we be happy and strong, or be funny and independent? Why do we have to be miserable? Like, why is the whole point of this show to make people miserable? That seems to be the only objective. They don't care if you finish. They don't care if you get hurt. They don't care if you quit. They just want to make you miserable. That's the plot. The show should be called Misery, because that's all that it is. Like, it's dark. It's meant to be. It looks cold because it is. They're cold. Like, there's nothing entertaining about it. There's nothing funny about it. There's nothing fun about it. You're just watching people get broken down. Why do you want it? Why would we want to do that? I mean, in my case, it's because I want to see Tom Sandoval get broken down. Like, he's a piece of shit, always has been, and I would like to see someone hit him in the face. That's all. I wish it was Ariana, but it's not. It's going to be someone on this, someone else. I want to see that happen, but. Like, Bodie Miller is on the show. He was an Olympic skier in, I want to say, the 90s, early 2000s. And, like, his child died. His child drowned in a neighbor's pool years and years ago. I don't want to see that man relive that every day. I don't want to see them interrogate him until he, like, reveals his darkest secrets and how he, like, thought his life was over when his child died. I don't need that shit. The show is kind of gross. It's just kind of gross. And there's also nothing entertaining about it, unless you, like me, would like to make fun of the dumbass trainers who are taking their jobs very seriously and pretending like they are actual military operatives. And they were. They used to be. They're not now. You're on a TV show, sir. Like, please stop. Like, maybe they're not taking this seriously because it's not serious. So I blame the writer's strike for inflicting the show on me. I never would have sat down to watch this show. Tom Sandoval or not, I would have waited until the clips of him getting hit made the rounds on Twitter, and I would have just watched it there. But because I was so bored this week, I actually watched this damn show. And that shouldn't happen. Don't watch this. If you have a morbid curiosity, you're like, how is this really a thing? I beg you not to watch it. Go on Twitter and watch some clips if you need to. Go read some recaps if you need to. But this is not an entertaining show. It's just not. But this is where we are. Also this week, in more entertaining TV, was the season 5 premiere of RuPaul's Drag Race UK. I've talked about seasons of this show in the past. This show, Drag Race UK, the first couple of seasons were great, especially season 2. You know, like, they had to shut down filming in the middle of the pandemic. It came out in, like, kind of the early days of the pandemic. Like, I think it came out in, like, the summer of 2020. We were all looking for entertainment, and this really fit the bill. It was a great season of TV. Like, it was a great cast, and they really hit a high with season 2 of RuPaul's Drag Race UK. And I just don't think they can or will match it. And I don't know why that is, because, I mean, for me, the peak of RuPaul's Drag Race US was season 6. And season 7 was rough. Like, the season immediately following did not live up to expectation. But they recovered. Like, they've had great seasons since then, obviously. Including All-Stars 2. All-Stars 2, yes, but including in, like, All-Star seasons and things like that. Like, they found other ways to make it work for them. Drag Race UK hasn't really done that. They had their own version of All-Stars, the Drag Race UK versus the World, which was not good either. And then season 3 was not good. The winner was not good. The challenges were weird. The cast was very flat for the most part. They shot themselves in the foot again, because of the three finalists, they picked the worst of the three to win. And she has since then also become, like, a very divisive figure in drag and is not well liked by fans or other queens. So that's also a choice. Then last season, season 4, was just kind of boring. It was dominated by two people, Danny Beard and Cheddar Gorgeous. Like, you knew one of the two of them was going to win, and it was just not an interesting season of television. So I feel like UK, like, needs a redemption season. And this could be it. I'm hopeful. I don't know. There's some shit going on that we'll get into that is very strange. It makes me think this is going to be another, lackluster at best season, but could potentially also just be, like, flat out bad. And that is because there are 10 girls on this season. There are 10 queens on the season. But if you watch the episode, you'll notice some, like, weird editing things. And in the final lip sync, you'll also notice that there is just an extra person, or, like, the legs and wig of an extra person, of an 11th queen on the runway. And that is because there was an 11th queen as they were filming this first episode. And that queen was accused of sexual assault, and the allegations either were made or came to light, I'm not sure which, during the filming of the show. And I guess instead of pulling a Sherry Pie from season 12 and, like, because Sherry, okay, I'm getting ahead of myself, and, like, disqualifying the queen and still showing her, they made a decision to excise her completely from the show. There is no mention of her. Her name is not mentioned. She is cut out, like, she's edited around, which is a feat in and of itself. Like, let's talk about that. That there is a full person who was on set for this entire episode, and there is nary a hint of it. Like, if you weren't looking for it, you might be like, oh, that's a weird choice of a shot, but you wouldn't think like there was something going on. And even during the lip sync, it's only because of where my eye was that I saw that there was just randomly a wig. So then I went back and Googled it, and yes, there was Eleven Queen, and there are other people doing deep dives. And like at one point during the mini challenge, you can see their legs. Like you count 11 pairs of legs, only 10 faces. Like the fact that they could edit around this person and not ever show them is wild. Like that's how much footage they have. That's how much footage they have from 2+ cameras that they can completely cut someone out and like it doesn't affect anything. I mean, I think it also helps that queen clearly like didn't do very well this episode. And the way it was set up was that there was a top 5 and a bottom 5, or I guess a bottom 6. And this queen was in the bottom 6. So they didn't have to like reshoot or refilm anything because she's already in the bottom. And then apparently she's gone in episode 2. And so that's wild right there. That they could edit around a person. And like even in group shots that they could edit around them creatively. And it's nuts. But also, I guess, instead of giving them the Sherry pie, where Sherry did very well, she was top 4 or 5, whatever it was. So they couldn't really edit around her. Like they had to show her. They limited her confessionals and then cut them completely eventually. And they cut her out of a couple challenges where she was performing by herself. But they ran a thing at the beginning, a title card at the beginning of every episode, being like, you know, one of these contestants has been accused of sexual assault, but we stand with the victims, blah, blah, blah. Because she made it all the way, basically. Whereas in this season, it's clear that the person who was edited out obviously didn't do very well in this first episode and probably not in the second. And I think from what I've read on other reports that it comes about in the second, that they allegedly, I'm not sure how much of this to believe or not, that she was either eliminated episode 2, was going to be disqualified episode 2, and then that instead of like, once they then realized the allegations, I guess made it a thing of, we're going to not give this any airtime, which I think is also a good choice. You know, it doesn't address anything, but it also doesn't platform the person who is in the wrong. So I'm not going to name her name. You can look it up if you're curious, but there was an 11th queen there. We don't see her. Instead, we see 10 other queens. Tamara Thomas from Hartlepool, who has like a Liverpudlian accent, but I guess it's Hartlepudlian, and she's young and thinks she's hot shit. And her accent is just hysterical to me. Like, she was trying to say there's, from Hartlepool where she's from, there's not even a gay bar. With her accent, it's like, there's not even a gay bar! Which is very much like a, you know, fat bastard from Austin Powers, which was just so funny to me. Production is clearly very invested in her. They give her a lot of airtime. Also, Banksy enters the workroom next, who's from Manchester and is the drag child of Cheddar Gorgeous, who was the runner-up last season. I don't like her. She's not interesting to me. She's like a very, like a shapeless little stick. She's just like a ruler. She walks in barely wearing any clothes, just like jewels and a bunch of like stuffed rats for some reason. I don't get her. And she doesn't do very well in the main challenge either. Miss Naomi Carter, who is the first of only 2 queens of color, comes in from Doncaster. In a kind of poorly made entrance look, doesn't fit very well, has a weird wig line with like kind of like a mismatched tone to her edges. Not my fave. Michael Morulli from Newcastle enters next and looks kind of like Morgan McMichaels. And I think she's going to do very well because she's older and has a lot of experience. And later in the episode, she and another contestant like have a conversation about how they have been in the business for so long and like have just been working shit gigs waiting for their big break. And now they finally got it. And I can see Rue like responding to that energy. 5th is Kate Butch from Derbyshire, or as they pronounce it, Derbyshire. And out of drag is like an adorable little Hogwarts looking kid with like a hairline that's halfway back to his cranium and like glasses and looks like a 60-year-old man, but is actually 25 and wild looking and says they're a comedian, but doesn't say a single funny thing either to me or to anyone else in the crowd. So, or in the group, the room. So I don't think it's just me. Then Caramel is 6th in the room from London, but originally from Atlanta, an American expat who went to London for college and stayed. Also only the 2nd trans woman, or 3rd, I guess, because I think Banksy is non-binary, to be on the show. Also, the only other queen of color besides Miss Naomi Carter on the season. She is roommates with Tamara. And so I can see them playing up like that angle of their kind of rivalry. Even though Carmel is, like, for me, head and shoulders above everyone else in this episode, she is, her makeup skills, her costumes, her performance, everything that she does this episode is above and beyond what anyone else did. And to me, she should be the clear front runner and probably winner, which would be a good look for the for UK. Like, they've only crowned white queens, four of them. They've only had now three trans women on the show. They have had only a handful of people of color. They've historically not treated them well. Justice for Theresa May and River Medway. So it would be a good look, I think, to crown Caramel, but also she's American. So I just don't think it's going to happen. I don't see it happening, which is a shame because she's great. Seventh is Ginger Johnson from County Durham. And he's adorable. Another kind of old school queen that's like a little bit like Ginger Minji in a way. And like adorable. Like, I want to cuddle up with him out of drag and read books. Like, he's wearing a cozy sweater and glasses and he's bald and has like a really positive energy. Not like the most high energy, but good vibes. I liked Ginger. Eighth is Dedelicious, who can go immediately. She's from Kent. She is the drag sister of Crystal Versace, who was that not very well liked winner of season 3 that I had mentioned. And you can tell they're drag sisters because they have the same face paint. And she's not great. I don't think she's long for this competition. I don't think she's going to make anybody forget Crystal. Ninth is Vicky Vivacious from Cornwall. She's the first Cornish queen to come in, and she gives me like Sherry Vine vibes. Like, she's again another old school queen, kind of like Michael Maruli. She's the one that has a conversation about taking all these like shit cabaret gigs in the middle of nowhere, and but she is a cabaret artist. So cute out of drag. Trade of the season. Not trade, actually. We overuse the term trade. She's not trade. Trade was like passing for straight, or not even passing for straight, like straight guys who would have sex with gay men for money back in New York in the early 1900s. Not trade, but definitely the most attractive of the group to me. Not a hugely exciting drag act, I don't think, but I love a cabaret queen. And then finally, the 10th queen to enter is Alexis St. Pete from London via Poland. And she is sickening, has a great body, always corseted, beautiful legs. She reminds me of like a sexy Katya. Adorable accent, self-aware in a lot of ways. I liked her. I liked her quite a bit. And then we get Rue coming in the room and like, oh, we're doing a Max, this is the first part of your Max challenge, was the first impressions ball. And this is your entrance look is your first category, daytime drag. Your second is going to be called Up in the Club. And you're going to turn your entrance look into a club look in an hour. And you're going to show off your looks for a bunch of Drag Race alum. And it's Pangina Heels, Lady Camden, Nikki Doll, Silky, Nutmeg Ganache, Blue Hydrangea, Sminty Drop, and Jimbo. And a lot of these make sense. You know, Pangina and Jimbo were on UK versus the World. Lady Camden was on season 15 US, but is from the UK. Nikki Doll is the host of Drag Race France. Blue Hydrangea, winner of UK versus the World. Jimbo won All Stars 8. And then we get like Sminty Drop, who was on last season of Drag Race UK and like didn't do very well, but whatever. And all the queens go up one by one and they do like a little dance and show off their new outfits. The only remarkable thing here is that Dedelicious's wig completely falls off her head and that Carmel slays the fucking house down and everyone else is left dead on the floor when she is done her performance. Clear winner there. And then for the third part of the ball, the main stage Max challenge is Fierce Impressions, an eleganza extravaganza, quintessentially you runway of your, you know, your fiercest look. After the mini challenge, we get that conversation between Michael and Vicky, which I think is going to work in both their favors. I think RuPaul will respond well to both of them. Clearly she does, because Vicky ends up in the top. They both end up in the top five later, Vicky in the top two. And then Kara and Banksy have a conversation about being trans and what that means to be on the show as trans people and to representing trans women and non-binary people. And all that is very interesting. And then we get to the main stage where Kristen McMenemy, who apparently is a model I've never heard of, but used to be friends with RuPaul back in the 80s and 90s. Cool, she's there and she's loud and she's American. And then everyone kind of comes out and does like their first impression looks. And I don't need to go into detail or anything, but like Banksy I thought sucked. Her outfit was bad. She couldn't move in it. She was like tiptoeing down the stage because it just completely constrained her body, including her legs. And like, it was dumb and she didn't look good enough. It wasn't a good enough garment to warrant all of that. I hated Ginger Johnson's outfit. It was like a flowery 60s frousy little housewife dress, like a muumuu, a house coat. I hated it. Dee Dee, I thought looked terrible as well. Her tights were all bunched up at the ankle. The look was completely ripped off from 100 different sources with like a big old collar over her head. And she looked old. Like she's, I think, in her early 20s, like younger than 25 for sure, and looked like she was in her 40s, 50s. It was not good. And the tights, I couldn't get over. I thought that Kate Butch was weird as shit. She was on a hoverboard for no reason. She was just like in a Marie Antoinette looking outfit on a hoverboard. I don't get it. I don't get her. I don't understand her. She thinks she's very funny and entertaining, and I just hear crickets whenever she's around, and I'm very confused by her. Miss Amy Carter was so boring. It was just like another ill-fitting garment, and it was just red and glittery. And then Tamara Thomas comes out, and she's last, and she tries to do this like Victoria's Secret like angel lingerie look, but then it kept bunching up over her butt, so her ass was hanging out. And then she tried to do the Courtney Act wings, where you pull the thing and the wings expand, and only one expanded, and it looked like trash. So like, not only was it an underwhelming look, but then it malfunctioned. Bye. What are you doing? Like, it was not a good runway. As entertaining as some of the queens are, like, I liked Michael. I loved Carmel. I liked Vicky. Tamara is loud as shit, but like, okay, I could see her making good TV in the same way that Ahura did in season 2. I liked Alexis, but she was a little soft-spoken. Like, it just was not a great episode. So I don't have high hopes for the season overall. Like, there are some really entertaining personalities that I think could elevate the show, like Michael Maruli, like Carmel. If Kate Butch does something that I understand, or that anybody understands at some point, like, because she's very confident, and that can be a good thing. Tamara has, like, that fire. That can be interesting if she has better drag somewhere. But I don't know if this is going to be the season to match season 2, but I just hope it's good enough to be better than seasons 3 and 4. There's no elimination. We're split into a top 5 and a safe 5. I'm not sure who would have been the bottom if there was one. For me, it probably would have been Tamara because of the malfunctioning wing. And, oh God, this is hard. Maybe Dee Dee because of the everything. The boringness, the blandness. Although Naomi Carter was bad too. It would have been a horse race for that top. Like, I think honestly they had a harder time taking 5 top looks than having 5 bottom looks. So the tops were Michael Maruli, Alexis, Ginger Johnson, Caramel, and Vicky Vivacious. And it comes down to Vicky and Caramel for the win. And Caramel's wearing like these 8-inch platforms and a huge headpiece, looks gorgeous, like a Cleopatra kind of thing. And they have to lip sync to Ooh Ah Just a Little Bit by Gina G, which Ooh Ah Just a Little Bit, Ooh Ah Little Bit More. Who doesn't love that song, right? If you grew up in the 90s, you roller skated to that shit, yeah? And it's a bad lip sync because the UK queens, I don't know if you recall, are not known for their lip syncing. Going all the way back to season 9 of RuPaul's Drag Race, when Charlie Hides on episode 3 was like, I don't lip sync, I sing live. So she just stood there and didn't move when they were singing I Wanna Go, lip syncing to I Wanna Go by Britney Spears. Ever since then, we've known the UK girls do not lip sync very well. Which is why I always find it wild that they do a lip sync for The Crown. Because it's like, ooh, which of these mediocre lip syncers are going to win? It's weird to like end on that note every season. Anyway, Vicky wins, even though I still would have given it to Carmel. even though neither of them did particularly well, just because she has a more emotive face, I think. And Vicky was like dancing all over that stage and running around and kind of was more chaotic, whereas Karma was more controlled, which was because of her shoes, but also I think like worked as like a confidence thing. But Vicky wins, and Vicky Vivacious is our first episode winner, and there is no elimination. And part of that is because I've also read, as I was looking at this 11th queen shit, that apparently there was a 12th queen that was cast who never even made it to the workroom for reasons that we don't know. We also don't know who she is, and she may be coming back to season 6. I would imagine that she has an invitation to come back, and there was like an outstanding reason, something like either they maybe got COVID or were exposed to COVID or had a family emergency, something along those lines. So this was supposed to be a 12 queen season, ended up an 11 queen season, but then the first episode ended up with 10 queens. So I think because that person didn't make it to production for the first episode, they eliminated nobody so they could start with 11 in the next episode. But I'm going to be very intrigued to see how they handle the 11th queen going forward, if it is true that she is disqualified or eliminated or whatever in the second episode. I'm intrigued to see how that plays out on screen, because obviously they're not addressing it. So what's it going to look like? Are we going to have another week where there's no elimination? Are we going to, at some point down the line, have a double save, like another non-elimination? Or do they just cut the episode order potentially? I don't know. Or did they go, maybe they plan a top four, we're going to get a top three? Unclear. But even the worst RuPaul's Drag Race season, you know, like I think I said this for Down Under when it was on, not this most recent season because it ended before I started the podcast up from hiatus, but like season 2, I think that it's not good. Down Under is not good, but even the worst Drag Race season is better than most reality TV in particular, but at this moment, TV in general. So like right now, I am watching Drag Race seasons that I would never have otherwise. Like the Drag Race Philippines season 2 finale is this week, and I'm watching Philippines this season, even though it's half in English, half dubbed because of like Tagalog being like a pidgin language. I don't usually like the series where I have to read the subtitles to understand, because then I feel like I miss too much, because drag is such a visual art form. Like I think the only one I really watch, and I didn't this season because I was very bored by it about halfway through, that I watch and read the subtitles is Drag Race España. And like I said, I didn't even watch this season all the way through. I think I made it maybe 4 episodes in, and I was just not, I was kind of bored by it. The cast wasn't great. But like I've tried Drag Race France, and I get distracted too easily with that. So I tend to watch the English speaking ones, like Down Under, US, UK, Canada, and Philippines is like half in English. But there's also like, I made it, I think, 2 episodes into Drag Race Mexico, and I did not like that. But Valentina is the host of that, and Lolita Banana from España, speaking of. There's also airing currently on WoW Presents Plus, other than Philippines and UK, the current seasons of Drag Race Brazil and Drag Race Germany are on there. Like I said, Down Under just ended. Mexico just ended. Belgique is filming season 2. España is filming an All-Stars season, or has filmed, is ready to release an All-Star season. France season 2 just ended. We're getting UK versus the World season 2 when this season of UK is over. Season 16 of US and Untucked in the winter. All-Stars 9 is coming next summer. We're also getting Global All-Stars, which was announced last year and is supposed to be filming before the end of the year for release sometime in 2024. And that's going to be an English version, or not in English, but like I guess an American quote-unquote version of UK versus the World, where it's going to be queens from all over the international franchises. And I think we're also getting a new season of Mexico. Oh my God, what other ones are there? There's rumors of a new season of Thailand, which has been off the air for many years. And it's just, there's so much Drag Race. So like, if you are bored and find yourself needing something to tide yourself over until we get like some better TV, whenever the fuck that happens, I recommend getting some WoW Presents Plus. Like you can get a free month, or I think it's like $40 a year, which I pay, and it's kind of ridiculous how I'm thinking about it because I only watch like 3 or 4 things on it, but whatever. go there and watch some International Drag Race. That's always fun. So yeah, Drag Race UK is streaming now on WOW Presents Plus Season 5. New episodes drop on Thursdays at 4 p.m., I think it is, on the East Coast of the U.S., as they're airing live at 9, I believe. Maybe it's 3. I forget. But I'm pretty sure it's... I'm almost positive it's 4 o'clock. It might be 3 o'clock. Regardless, they drop during the day on Thursday. So Thursday night, get yourself home, cuddle up with a nice little blanket, and watch some queens be stupid with very annoying accents. Okay. My recommendation for the week, it is spoopy season. Happy October. I hate Halloween as a holiday. I'm sure I've talked about this before. For me, what this month is about is I love horror movies. It is Sunday at 2:30 in the afternoon. I've already watched Freddy vs. Jason. For some reason, I had like a hankering to watch this like 3 days ago and couldn't find it, but then saw that it was coming to Max today. So I watched that. That's on Max. I have, when I'm done with this, I'm going to grade a couple papers, and then I'm going to watch Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey, which if you haven't heard of, I haven't seen it yet. It was released for one night by Fathom Events in February, and it's like a shitty low-budget slasher movie. Since Winnie the Pooh, the character by A.A. Milne, is now in the public domain, this British guy wrote a slasher movie with Winnie the Pooh, the bear, as the killer. And it's like played by a guy in like a lumberjack outfit, like overalls and flannel with a bear mask on. It looks absolutely insane, and it got terrible reviews, but also like a whole bunch of press because of how fucking weird it was. And the trailer went viral on Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter earlier this year. They've already filmed a sequel, and he's like making this shared cinematic universe with retellings of Bambi and Peter Pan that are like horror tinged. So I'm going to watch that. That's on Peacock as of today. And I love horror movies. Like, go to Max, go to the Halloween Hub, go to Huluween, which Hulu is killing it this year. I'm going to be honest with that. There are so many movies that they're releasing this season that I want to watch. This week, they're releasing The Boogeyman, which is the Stephen King adaptation that was in theaters over the summer. Slaughterhouse, which looks kind of like that Winnie the Pooh movie Absurd about a killer sloth in a sorority house. what else? They have... the new season of American Horror Stories is coming around Halloween. The new season of American Horror Story is there, which I might talk about next week because it's real bad. And I also just, I love horror novels. I've really gotten into reading horror novels recently, and like maybe like the past 2 or 3 years. And I think we're seeing like a resurgence of horror writing right now. It's super strong, and there are some great writers working in horror at the moment. Like, it used to kind of be Stephen King, and then that was pretty much it. Like, you had Stephen King, and then you had like Dean Koontz sometimes, but then he also did like sci-fi, and who's the other one? The other one that's like the two of them. It'll come to me. But you have like them kind of operating, and then everything else is like schlock. You know, it's like self-published, or it's like young adult, or for children, like Goosebumps. Oh, that's coming to Hulu too, and Disney Plus. That was the other thing that was I wanted to watch, was the new Goosebumps TV series. You have like R.L. Stine and Fear Street and all those kind of things. But now I feel like we're seeing a resurgence in like meaningful horror in literature in particular. Like, I love Rachel Harrison. I'm reading her new book, Black Sheep, right now. She's great. She's like very feminist horror. And body horror, love that. Alison Rumfitt, who released 2 books this year. She's a British trans woman who writes body horror about the trans experience. Her first book was called Tell Me I'm Worthless. So good. And I just read her new one that comes out next week. Got an advanced copy called Brainworms. Wild. Fucking gory and creepy and so fucking weird. I loved it. And I'm like, Chuck Wendig is writing and has a lot of horror out. Luc Dumas, who wrote one of my favorite books last year, is releasing The Paleontologist this year, which I also read an advanced copy of and fucking loved, about a paleontologist who goes back to the museum in his small town of Pennsylvania. Hello, where I live. Like, literally, it takes place right down the road from me. Where his sister disappeared when they were visiting as kids, and he's like haunted. The museum is haunted, a haunted museum. So good. It's like Night at the Museum meets Jurassic Park, but also like a ghost story. Oh, I loved it. That's coming out on Halloween. So I'm excited for that. But the place I'm usually kind of like left cold for horror is TV. Because, like, you know, there's American Horror Story, which I don't think is ever all that scary and usually sucks. And then there's like anthology shows. Like there used to be back in the 80s and 90s in syndication, I used to watch Freddy's Nightmares, which was kind of like Tales from the Crypt, which was another one, but with Freddy Krueger hosting it. There was that Friday the 13th show that also had nothing to do with Jason Voorhees or the mythology of the series. That was just kind of like the Twilight Zone, but horror. There was the Twilight Zone. There was Tales from the Crypt. There you see more horror shows. And now I feel it's kind of like Slasher, which I think I've recommended before. That's on Shudder. I do like that. And then you have like the horror drag show Dragula, which I've talked about before. That's coming back this month. I'm excited for that. But there's not a whole lot of like scripted horror TV shows. But one that I loved that was on the air a few years ago was the TV adaptation of The Exorcist. And this ran for 2 seasons on Fox in 2016 and 2017. And the first season starred, both seasons starred Alfonso Herrera, who was a Mexican actor, as Father Thomas. And then Ben Daniels, who I love, is a British actor, mostly of stage, but has a lot of screen credits too. He was in the third season of The Crown. He is on Foundation on Apple TV Plus right now. And he's also on the new season of Lord of the Rings when that comes out, as Father Marcus. And there are two exorcists who are brought together to deal with a family in Chicago who are parishioners of Father Tomas. And they have a demon in their house. And the mom is played by Gina Davis. The father is Alan Ruck. It was just such a great cast. And then season two is a new story. It's the two exorcist priests who go and deal with an exorcism with having to do with orphans. And then John Cho is the lead in that season. And they have like some great guest stars, like Sharon Gless is in the first season. Deanna Dunnigan is in the first season. Alicia Witt has a recurring role in the second season. It's just really entertaining and legitimately creepy. And it ties in a really surprising and interesting way about halfway through the first season with the original movie. So it's a sequel to the first movie and ignores all the shitty sequels and prequels. And one reason I'm recommending this is that, one, it's October, it's spoopy season. It's on Hulu right now. Both seasons are currently on Hulu. And the new movie, The Exorcist Believers, or The Believer, I forget which, is coming out this Friday and looks to make a big old splash and looks really creepy and kind of gross. So a perfect time to catch up on a show like this that is eerie more than it is scary. Like, if you're a person who was scared shitless by the first Exorcist movie, this is not that bad. It's not that kind of scary. It was on Fox after all. But it is really creepy and suspenseful and more like a thriller, I guess, than it is like genuinely scary. But it has great Halloween vibes. The performances are surprisingly good. I mean, it's Gina fucking Davis, number one. And Ben Daniels is just, ooh, he's so good. And his character is really interesting. He's gay, both in life and on the show. And the questions that opens up about, you know, he's a Catholic priest. Like, what the fuck, right? So that's interesting. And it's like a good cop, bad cop kind of relationship between the two of them. Him and Father Tomas. Alfonso Herrera is all super hot. So if you just need some eye candy, feel free. It was a really well done show, I thought. And I was very upset when it got canceled. It was canceled after 2 seasons in 2017. But they put it on Fridays, which, I mean, they shot it in the foot before it ever even started. It never got a chance. Because they just put it on Fridays. And, like, that's not when this target audience is going to be home. And this was really, like, believe it or not, it's weird to think of, but 2016, which was not that long ago, was really before streaming was a thing. Like, it was in that weird in-between place where ratings were heavily declining, but we had no real other way to measure viewership and interest in a show. So it wasn't like it would be on Fox on Friday and then on Hulu on Saturday and they could gauge its like streaming numbers during the week. No, it was on Friday and either you watched it live or you DVR'd it and that was the end of it. Or you watched it on demand. There was no go to streaming option. or any meaningful one. You know, like now it's like I watch everything on Bravo and NBC, but I watch it on Peacock the next day because there's fewer commercials on the ad tier that I have. And I would rather watch them with a minute of commercials than 4 minutes of commercials. But they can measure that, right? It's not like Riverdale, where it didn't do very well in live viewership, but then it was huge on Netflix between season one and two. Like, it was just kind of left to fend for itself on a Friday night. And, you know, it was 2016 when it premiered in September. So it was like we were all not paying attention to much except the election that was about to happen. And then afterward, we were paying attention to the election that had just happened. So it was a weird time. And I'm glad it got a second season because I also really liked that. But yeah, it didn't do very well. And I think that now this is the kind of show that if they would put it directly on streaming and it would get a cult following and last forever. So that's my recommendation for your horror viewing pleasure is The Exorcist, both seasons on Hulu. But like I said, I don't love Halloween. I love horror movies and TV shows and stuff. But for me, this is all about the fact that in, I want to say like maybe 19, I think it's 19 days. Less than 3 weeks. In less than, yeah, 19 days because it's on a Friday. So in 19 days from today, so 18 days from release day, less than 3 weeks from release, Hallmark Channel goes all Christmas for Countdown to Christmas, starting the week before Halloween. Usually it's like a couple days before, but because of where Halloween falls this year, they're starting off, and Christmas falls, they're starting a full week before Halloween. So I think it's like the 22nd is when we're getting Countdown to Christmas. And if you know me by now from listening to this shit, that is what I am anticipating. Reading horror novels while I'm watching a Hallmark Christmas movie, that's my idea of a great October. Okay, that's all I have for you this week. Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Fake TV Critic. I'll be back next week with more recaps, more analyses, more reviews, more news, and more recommendations. Have a great week, everyone.